Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday morning, the 10th of July. Governor Walker declared a state of drought emergency in 42 counties in the state of Wisconsin yesterday. In much of southern Wisconsin, we have had a mere 0.31 inches of rain in the month of June and no rain in July. That officially puts us in a moderate drought category. In June, Wisconsin communities broke 334 maximum temperature records and tied 32 more. The state broke 76 minimum temperature records, new records for hot nights. With additional weeks of unseasonably high temperatures and no rain, the areas already in the moderate drought region could possibly move into severe drought before summer ends. We're all feeling the lack of rain, but for farmers, they are exhausted and they may be losing a lot of money this year. This hour, we're going to have three guests to talk about the reasons for the drought, how we respond to the drought, and how farmers are coping and the help that may be available for farmers in the state of Wisconsin. And we'll be welcoming your phone calls, a particular plea to hear from those of you who are farming in these conditions and what you're doing to save your crops and to get some sleep as well. Paul Mitchell is associate professor in the Department of Agricultural and Applied Economics at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. Professor Mitchell, thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Good morning.
Good morning to you. And Professor Chris Kucharik, Associate Professor of Agronomy and Environmental Studies at the Center for Sustainability and the Global Environment at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, is also with us. Professor Kucharik, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen. Just wish it was a better situation to be on the show.
Yeah, I wish it were pouring as we were speaking, but it sure isn't. And later this hour, we'll be speaking about the help that's available for farmers with the program supervisor for the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection's Farm Center. Professor Kucharik, let's start with you and let's look at definitions. We are in a moderate drought situation. When could it become more than moderate, and what does moderate mean?
Well, I think immediately when the new U.S. drought monitor probably comes out later this week, there's a likelihood we'll be pushed into severe. There's a variety of indices that are used, and some of these are short-term and long-term effects. Right now, this moderate drought means we're seeing impacts to crops, in particular, as everyone knows, other agricultural things related to farming, and sometimes water supplies and that. So it's not at a, you know, we're not at a extreme drought condition, but obviously we all see what's going on and what might happen if this continues.
So we need rain within the next week or it will become a severe drought?
It's hard to say exactly. I haven't actually gone through and done these calculations myself, but from the other experts I've been talking to, that, you know, another week or two, not only here in southern Wisconsin, but other large portions of the Midwest, which are already in either a moderate or severe drought to our south. We're not going to get any better without any rain, so there's only one direction to go, and that's unfortunately worse.
Professor Mitchell, is this a rarity in the state of Wisconsin, or have we been through these extremely dry periods many times before?
Well, Chris would know more about the history of the weather, but in general, this is looking to be a bad year unless we get some rain. We've had some bad ones. I mean, the drought in 1988 was the big one. But we have fluctuations around the trend yields from all our major crops, corn and soybeans particularly. And this could be one we remember in 40 years, just like the drought of 88. We'll just have to wait. Hopefully it won't be one of those years we remember.
I can't imagine. I live in the city of Milwaukee, and it's incredibly dry here. It's okay for the grass to just sort of wait until it starts raining. But for the first time, there are a lot of people who live in communities who are being told that you got to water the city trees or they might die. And we're seeing plants and everything just die. I can't imagine what it must be like for farmers. How are they surviving with absolutely no rain? How are they keeping their livelihood going?
Well, their farmers are, at this time of year, you just be patient and wait, and that's what they're doing. I mean, it's a nervousness and a concern, anxiety is building, but you just have to wait and see, and that's something every farmer's used to. If you're not used to that, you shouldn't be a farmer. But that doesn't say it's easy to go through or anything. A lot of them are concerned. They're very concerned about what's going to happen. I mean, there is insurance for a lot of them, but still, all of us, most of us own vehicles and have homes, and we'd rather not have to use our insurance. We'd rather not have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And farmers are no different. They'd rather not have to use their insurance for those who have insurance. There's definitely a concern out there. We're still wait and see attitude, though, for a lot of us.
Chris, do you have some kind of table that shows how much rain corn needs each month, or soybeans, or beans, or all of the crops that are grown here?
Yeah, that's usually the standard number that the experts will throw out will be about an inch a week, and you know that's approximately, you know, about 3.5 to 4.5 inches of rain each month during the summer, June, July, and August is about what we average. So, you know, there's a reason why, you know, we're growing what we grow here, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana. We get typically adequate rainfall to keep up with those demands. The problem is that it often isn't delivered in those timely amounts. I mean, how often do we actually get an inch of rain per week? It doesn't usually happen that way, and so we have to deal with these stretches of weather where we might go 2 weeks without rainfall. But when we start getting into 4, 5, 6 weeks without getting appreciable rain, crops just cannot deal with that, you know. And we're at a critical juncture now, particularly with corn, or in the next week or two as those plants get into silking. If those silks of the year are not pollinated, kernels won't develop, and farmers are going to have to start thinking about what they're going to do with a crop that might be a total loss.
Mm-hmm.
The next 2 weeks are just, you know, absolutely critical. And following up, you know, on the sort of historical nature of these variability, going back to 1988, the key difference in that year was that the month of May was much drier than it was this year. Particularly, Milwaukee that year only got a half an inch of rain. This year they got almost 4 inches of rain in your area. So 88 kind of got off to a really bad start immediately around the time of year when crops were being planted. And the difference this year is that we did have at least a few inches of rain in May around planting to help things, you know, sort of get growing and last a little bit longer. So that the drought of 88, there are some definite differences in terms of how things played out with precipitation.
Mm-hmm. And couple the lack of rain with the extraordinary heat that we have had. We're going to get a little more, but nothing probably, at least I hope, as we had last year when you couldn't even walk outside. That's got to complicate the problem even more, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know, crops and all plants, I mean, we're all seeing this in our yards, you know, with whether you have trees that have been planted for 20 years or something that was just planted last year. You know, they can only withstand a certain amount of heat without any water, and more heat and no water is just sort of a double whammy in terms of bad news for plants. So the other connection, too, that some people have made is that when we have a large region of the Midwest that really is at a large deficit for soil moisture, usually that actually allows the air to warm up easier than it would if we actually had some water in the soil. And this is all connected to plants being good rapid recyclers of water that falls as rainfall. And so when things are drier, there's sort of a tendency to sort of have a feedback effect with temperatures. And so if we don't get rainfall in the next couple of weeks, the likelihood of having a warmer summer than average, you know, I'm not going to say that we're going to be over 100 again, but to have a lot of days in the 90s is more likely to happen, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Paul, how do farmers cope with the possibility, and they have to be thinking about this seriously, that maybe their corn crop is going to be a loss? How do you economically cope with that, plan for that possibility?
Well, a big chunk of these farmers have insurance to cover yield and price revenue shortfalls. I mean, somewhere over, well over 70% of the soybean acres, probably 75% or more, and corn is probably 70 or even a little bit more, have insurance. And that's what provides them with the payments to help them through the economic shortfalls, if there are some. And then you just have to cash flow it. You get your payments. The revenue policies won't pay until after the corn prices are settled in November for December corn futures. So it'll be December. They'll get a payment if there is one due. They'll just have to work with it like any other year. That's roughly when some begin to sell their crop as well. And so they'll have to work with their bankers, first with the crop insurance agents and the adjuster, and then their bank to work out the cash flow issues. That's how they deal with it economically from a financial perspective. But, you know, there's other issues. Some of them have sold their corn on forward contracts, to make delivery of a certain number of bushels in December. And they won't have the grain, potentially, and so they're going to have to communicate with their elevator, whoever they sold it to figure out how they want to deal with this issue. If they have insurance, which, again, most of them do, they should have if they have the revenue policy, they should have the cash to buy corn or soybeans at the current prices at that time or pretty close to them. So, like, again, it'll just come down to communicating with your crop insurance agent, then with your lenders and with your anybody you forward contracted with, just to make sure you're all in the same boat and understand what's going on.
Are farmers worried that this might be the beginning of a substantial change in our weather?
I haven't heard that yet, but, I mean, it's the records. You keep hearing about these records, and it's all the Dust Bowl is when the last time some of this kind of stuff happened. It's also the Dust Bowl the last time we planted this much corn in the U.S. Maybe that's connected. I hate to say that, but it's just a happenstance, obviously. But, yeah, we've had some pretty high corn acreage planted around the U.S. this year, and the last time we did that was, again, the middle of the Dust Bowl.
Mm. Chris, do you think of the Dust Bowl when you think about this?
In some ways I do when you start looking at the daily temperature records that have been set and sort of the continuous string of, you know, daily highs above 100 degrees and going back. There are only a couple other times in history, at least according to Madison's records, that we had accomplished that. But, you know, the Dust Bowl era was a very prolonged period. You know, we're dealing with a season right now, and, I know how weather goes. I mean, there's places, as we've seen in the Midwest this year, that have just been getting way too much rain. But unfortunately, when you look at the drought monitor map for the U.S., I think there's a statistic that says it's close to almost 50% of the land area in the U.S. right now is experiencing some type of drought.
Really?
Categorization, yeah. And that's the largest extent since they've been keeping these records. Yeah, it's just daunting when you look at these maps and see how much of the U.S. is dealing with water shortages right now. But it's, you know, as everyone knows, it's hard to know what's going to happen, you know, next year. And we were just talking about devastating flooding here in Wisconsin just a couple of years ago. So it's the extremes that really test our systems and, you know, drive our thinking and how we're going to need to adapt to deal with that kind of variability. And as Paul said, if you look at the long-term, you know, trends and crop yields, we're always at, you know, looking at what's the mean value, what are we likely to see, and the deviations below that trend line are the extremes. And unfortunately, as we keep producing more and more, you know, grain each year and keep improving the amount of productivity we get, we have a lot further to fall off of that shelf downward, unfortunately. So thus, I wouldn't jump on that bandwagon quite yet, and I'm sure a lot of my colleagues wouldn't either, but it is something that's in the back of everyone's minds, I'm sure.
Right. What about the farm animals? How do they cope with what happened last week? What kinds of precautions have to be taken? And I don't know how they survive having to be maybe in a barn, but how do you survive 104 if you're a cow?
Well, I'm not an expert in that. I have some ideas. I wonder if Paul might be able to answer that.
I'm in the same boat, but I have some ideas. I mean, it's a lot like we do. They try to stay cool, but, I mean, low-income people in this country or this state, you know, a lot of them didn't have air conditioning. And then there's plenty of people who Wisconsin doesn't need air conditioning very often, so they survived. But I don't know about you guys, but I wasn't very hungry when it was that hot.
Right.
And I think cows are in the same boat. I've seen some of the numbers, and people say they had their production fall off a third or, you know, somewhere in that region for those few hot days from the milk cows. They're just, they don't, I don't want to eat. I don't know about cows exactly. I'm sure it's a stress on them, and they don't produce as much.
Mm-hmm. We're going to start welcoming phone calls for both of you. Yesterday, the governor of the state declared a drought emergency in 42 counties. There will be new drought numbers released in a couple days, and our guests indicate that we are beyond a moderate drought and that farmers in this area will really be hurting if we don't get very much rain, and we need it pretty soon. We might be losing a corn crop. So how are you, particularly farmers, coping with this? What happens when there's no rain? How does it change how you have to farm? Are you worried about a loss of crop? We will later talk about farmers who have services available for farmers to help them through this drought period. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org, and you can always go to our Facebook page, which is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Professor Chris Kacharek is Associate Professor of Agronomy and Environmental Studies at the Center for Sustainability and the Global Environment at UW-Madison. Professor Paul Mitchell, Associate Professor in the Department of Agricultural and Applied Economics, also at UW-Madison. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program today, The Price of the Ticket, Barack Obama and the Rise and Decline of Black Politics. Frederick Harris, author of that book, who is the director of the Institute for Research in African American Studies at Columbia University, will be our guest. Let's go to phone calls. We have many of them. Kenneth in Janesville, hi. Kenneth, go ahead. No, Kenneth isn't there. Let's go next to Susan in Coon Valley. Hi, Susan.
Good morning. Just to enlighten your guests and then to also ask them about the long-term effects of this. Yes, when they were young, we did survive without air conditioning. However, in barns nowadays, with the large number of cows that farmers are now milking, cows give off an incredible amount of heat, probably more so than any other domesticated animal. And the heat in the barns is incredible. And perhaps there should be some kind of funding available for farmers to run the fans and have the misters going that would help that. However, my question to them is, in terms of the long-term drought, what effect will that have in terms of our overall economy, particularly with the corn crop?
Paul, you want to start?
Yeah. In general, it's going to create disruptions. But for those who are insured, the financial aspects, yes, farmers won't come out as well as if they had harvested a nice average crop. But there will definitely be financial disruptions. And for those without insurance, it could be a catastrophe. And that's the side thing. It's the farmers that I'll call them the ones that are already financially in problematic straits are going to be facing some problems. And be honest, it's a lot of times a lot of dairy farmers haven't still been buying crop insurance because a lot of them tend to market through their cattle is how they think of their marketing instead of worrying about the corn and soybean prices so much. And that's the group that's going to have trouble getting forage this year. We haven't talked about the alfalfa crop and such, but a lot of this corn is going to be used for silage for cattle. And again, those are the kind of farms that are going to be without insurance, who are going to have trouble finding forage, are going to have to buy forage to maintain their herd. And that's going to create a lot of financial stress for those individuals. I don't know what to say except I feel bad for them because there is really, if they don't have insurance and they don't have a corn crop and their hay hasn't done that well, they're going to be short of forage.
How expensive is this insurance, Professor Mitchell?
It varies each year depending on the price of the corn and soybeans and such. But, you know, it also depends on the kind of policy you buy. It's like asking how much does car insurance cost. Depends on what deductible you choose, what kind of car you're insuring, how many cars you insure. So, but it, it can easily be 30, 40, 50, 60 bucks an acre, depending on, again, what coverage level or deductible you're choosing, and then your own risk, how risky. You know, if you're insuring a teenage son, your car insurance is higher than if you're insuring a 40-year-old woman.
Mm-hmm.
It just varies, and so it's hard to generalize.
Professor Kucharik, you want to take on the cows in the barn?
Yeah, I mean, I knowing a little bit about heat exchange and animals, I mean, that makes perfect sense given the size of those animals. And, you know, I'm not familiar with a lot of, you know, programs out there to offer assistance or funding, you know, for the types of things that, you know, are being mentioned. But I do know that, you know, from all I've heard, you know, production of these cows, you know, goes down as the temperature goes up. And, you know, in terms of looking outward to the future in the context of climate change over the next 30, 40, 50 years, we know that the frequency of these really hot days is going to go up, and this type of problem isn't going to go away. So I think it is something that needs to get on the radar screen in the near future.
I think you're right. It needs to be on the radar screen. Is it on the radar screen?
I think it is here in Wisconsin amongst colleagues that I work with in terms of those potential adaptations that we in agriculture that we're likely to need to make as climate continues to change in the future. But I'll be honest, I haven't had a lot of, you know, one-on-one discussions with the dairy experts in terms of what they really think those animals are going to need. I mean, this all gets down into running sophisticated numerical models and, you know, models of how the animals are going to respond to those types of temperatures. And I'll be honest that type of modeling and research is not something that I'm aware of, you know, going on right now. So there's a niche out there. If there's some potential graduate students listening, there might be a thesis or a dissertation there waiting for you.
I would say so. Yeah. Susan, thank you. David in Ironwood, Michigan. Hi.
Yes, for the people in Wisconsin, global warming is happening. Go to the National Science Foundation website. They have excellent resources there to educate yourself. You say it's going to cost a lot to do stuff. It's going to cost a lot more if we don't do something. We'll wait to have your guests talk on that.
Professor Mitchell?
Yeah, there's a lot of USDA has funding to help us think about as a nation and agriculture and specifically how to adapt to these issues that are happening. I mean, the climate change, regardless if you want to believe why and what's happening, it's something's happening. And so, yeah, people are doing research on that and thinking about policy issues. Crop insurance is a big one because as a way to help farmers deal with it financially. We've got all kinds of programs. Do we need to come up with new technologies? Maybe we need to think about cooling cows to help them be productive during extreme events. You know, flood mitigation issues to help change the way watersheds are organized, you know, so they don't create as much flood, you know, more retention of the water on the landscape for the times we get the big rains, which would be really nice right now to have a nice rain. So it's on people's radar, but I think of it as this. When the insurance companies are interested in doing something about it, it probably means there's real money moving around, and that's probably what I think of it as. The insurance companies are very interested in climate change and what it means for the profitability of their industry in the long term. So I think you're right. Something's happening, and it's smarter to think proactively as opposed to reactively and wait for problems to happen.
Thank you, David, very much for the call. Julie and Viola, hi.
Hi, this is Julie De La Terra. I'm a graduate student at the Gaylord Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies.
Oh, great, Julie.
I live surrounded by corn farmers, and from my research and what I've learned at UW-Madison, putting the pieces together, what we're looking at is a loss of resiliency within our systems. If you want to talk about the Dust Bowl, there was a lot more soil on the land back then, and the conditions were different than they are now. There's a lot more fragmentation. There's a lot more urbanization, paved over land, and now we have GMO crops. Now, the GMO crops have very little resiliency to drought because the big seed companies don't engineer their crops. to handle drought or flood. They engineer them so that you can spray tons of chemicals on them. So what I see is a real short-sightedness on the from the farmer's perspective and a lot of people's perspective, pushing the land and pushing our systems beyond what it can accommodate. And I feel like the answers come from looking at what natural systems really have in play to deal with extreme weather events instead of thinking we can engineer our way out of it. I would like both professors to comment on this, please.
All right. Thanks for the call. Professor Kocharek, you want to start?
Sure. Well, it's entirely right that obviously since the 1930s, our landscape has changed completely in the way that it's been split up. And, you know, we have growing cities. We're planting, you know, a few different crops now. There's other things going on in terms of restoration efforts, but they're all happening in very small parcels versus what how things used to be before European settlement came to this region and started farming. There is one point that I want to bring up, though, and, you know, I'm not an expert on crop breeding in that. Even though I'm in a department of agronomy, I do know that when I've talked to people about how our crops had responded to the 88 drought versus how they might respond this year, it's been brought to my attention that actually some of the breeding in that has basically gone to help crops deal with water stress better, and that some of that might actually help out this year, you know, with the dry conditions. So I think there's two sides of the story, and I understand the students' concerns in that, but I still think that there are some good things that have come about from engineering and biotechnology and that, but we do have to keep in mind some of the unfortunate things that are happening in terms of what the student is bringing up. But mm-hmm. I'll let Paul fill in his perspective on that.
Yeah, I'm more aware of the soil erosion improvements we've had in the last, like, 20, 30 years, and we've done a pretty good job compared to what was happening in the 80s. I'm thinking, like, with conservation compliance implemented in the Farm Bill and then in the widespread adoption of things like no-till and reduced tillage, which is, you know, it reduces your costs as well as maintains cover and builds soil organic matter to help improve your soil quality. And those are benefits. I don't know how far back, but that's like in the last 30 years we've seen those improvements. And the other big one is the GM crops are more resilient in terms of water drought stress because I'm thinking particularly the insect-resistant varieties, the BT corn for corn borer and the BT corn for rootworm. A crop that doesn't have a hole in it from an insect larval going through it in the stalk, that's going to have better water movement. A crop that has better roots because it doesn't have the rootworm having chewed them off. Both of those plants are more drought tolerant. The tons of chemicals reference, I'm guessing it's referring to the Roundup Ready crops. And those, I mean, in this system, if you have better weed control, you can have less competition for the water that is there. But we've had problems with herbicide-resistant weeds as well with the over-reliance on Roundup or glyphosate. So all these technologies are, in some sense, I'd argue they're neutral. It's how we use them that's it gets into the moral debate of what's right and wrong. But I would say that the GM crops from the insect side particularly have been helped the crops be more drought-tolerant and they are working on drought-tolerant varieties to help grow crops in other parts of the world as well.
Thank you, Julie, very much for the call. We had an email, somebody wondering about Lake Michigan water levels and what about water in the southern part of the state? What are farmers doing to irrigate what the crops that they have? And is there a concern about Lake Michigan levels and other levels?
Yeah. Well, I guess the big story here and also in reference to the governor's declaration for emergency status for these 42 counties so they can draw water from lakes and streams, unfortunately, most of the farmers are not equipped to have the equipment to actually do that. And I think I was reading something in the Milwaukee Journal this morning that the last time that this was allowed back in 2009, there were only 5 applicants.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So that's, you know, we're not irrigating in this part of the state for a reason, is that, you know, we normally do get enough rainfall. My worry would be if everyone all of a sudden started going out in terms of farmers and withdrawing water from lakes and streams, we'd have probably another problem coming about from that. So, you know, there's just, it's a precious resource. I wouldn't be so worried about, you know, lake levels in Lake Michigan or the Great Lakes dropping due to, you know, some irrigation. I'd be more worried that the kind of weather we're having is just driving a lot of loss of water through evaporation. That would be a much larger sink of water than a lot of what would probably be going on in terms of farming practices here. And again, going back to a point I made earlier about, you know, where we were back in from August of 2007 through 2009, we were in a very wet pattern. If everyone has a short memory about what had happened in June of 2008, when we saw houses being blown into the Wisconsin River near Lake Delton.
Right.
You know, water tables, we've had a lot of groundwater flooding in the southern part of the state occur due to those things. We had winters with way above normal snowfall, so we had a lot of additional recharge of water. We had a lot more precipitation than what was being used up by plants. So we saw this rise in water levels, and we had a lot of fields, I'm speaking here in the Dane County area in Madison, that were flooded, and those water levels hadn't actually gone down until about this summer now. Now that we've actually gotten a long stretch of dry weather, we're starting to see things level out a little bit. And so sometimes these things in the long term do average out, and it's a matter of what are we doing in the short term, unfortunately, to deal with those impacts immediately.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Josie in Sheboygan. Hi, Josie.
Hi, good morning. I disagree with some of the things your guests are saying. I mean, I'm not a scientist, but I do have eyes and ears, and I have age on my side. You know, I feel very sorry for the small farmer, but these factory farms, they're just, I can imagine what's going on in those where those animals never even get to go outside. If people would eat less meat to begin with, they'd be healthier. I know that's like sacrilegious, especially in Wisconsin, you know, a few less brats, you know, but you have to consider the whole picture. And that Monsanto that has their big thumb on everything, trying to hoard all the seeds and all this GMO stuff, they don't know. Those GMO products or whatever in the field are going to other plants and infecting those. Nobody knows what it's going to do in the natural world. You know, they do things because they can, not because they should. You know, it's just horrendous, I think. You know, and
let's go to Professor Mitchell for a response first. Hi, Professor. Or go ahead, Professor Mitchell.
Yeah, we can argue about this or exchange information, but I mean, a lot of people, it's just a choice they've made. They aren't going to believe whatever you want to talk about. To me, it's a lot like other debates. Pick your favorite controversial topic. As a public scientist, I try my best to do everything where you look at the data and make conclusions based on the data we can collect. We've been using these biotech GM crops for more than 15 years, and we haven't seen any major human health issues with them in terms of people consuming them, or the same with animals. We've looked a lot for environmental effects. We haven't really found any major negative ones in the sense of, like, you know, I'm thinking of like the monarch butterfly concern that happened early on. Movement of the pollen into other plants, yes, that happens in some of the crops. I'm thinking of the mustards, and there's concerns about the with canola genes moving into wild mustard. Relatives, same thing with like the rice is another concern because some of the weeds are close relatives of the crop. And there are concerns. There are concerns. Any technology you use has, it's not all positive. If it was all positive, it wouldn't be anything to debate. We'd all agree and just use it.
I'm wondering, one of you brought up right and wrong. That phrase is circulating in my mind right now. And I'm wondering, considering what's happening with the temperature and with no rain, are there things that all of us should be doing that would be the right thing to do when it comes to our use of water, when it comes to what we might be able to do to help farmers in the state? Can you give us some guidance about what is right?
I guess I can start off in terms of the water conservation question or idea is that, you know, water is just, whether we want to believe it or not, because some of us have been dealing with too much water, but others, like the northern part of the state, have been dealing with drought up until the last couple of years. It's a precious resource. It is the next big problem that's going to face society, unfortunately. And, you know, I like to remain unbiased in terms of being, you know, a scientist in that and look at facts and figures, but it really does bother me when I do see people trying to water their lawns. I've got people in my subdivision with, you know, three-quarter acre lots trying to keep up with keeping their grass green, and a lot of them don't understand where's that water coming from. If you've got a private well, there's not some box around your lot underground that's your water. It's connected to everyone else.
Right. And
you've got to be educated and know that, you know, we're all connected in one way or another when it comes to water. And, you know, if you've got trees and shrubs and other plants that are sensitive, well, those are a lot harder to replace than grass. Grass, you can easily grow that again, and it's meant to go dormant for many weeks during the summer and withstand that. If you've got a 15-year-old tree or a 2-year-old tree that you spent a few hundred dollars on and it dies, that's a different story. So I think you got to be careful and pick and choose what you're trying to irrigate in your own gardens and then lawns. And so that's just, you know, one idea I have when it comes to water and conservation. In terms of helping farmers, that's a good question. I mean, buy local if you can. I mean, I'm thinking about, let's say, sweet corn this year. Undoubtedly, I know that there's some people that got it in early, and it's coming off, you know, right now, or did a couple weeks ago. Obviously, the prices are probably going to be a little bit higher. Well, don't hesitate to support local farming. You know, go to farmers markets. Try to support farming here locally as much as you can. That's, to me, probably the best thing that you can do. And hope for rain.
And hope
for
rain.
There's not really much more we can do, right?
I know.
Be patient.
Professor Mitchell, how would you answer that question?
A lot of what Chris said just makes sense. And, yeah, water is the big issue coming around. I mean, you look at the data, and 75-80% of the world's water that's diverted from its natural use is used for agriculture. And yet we need to, the data show if we maintain our current trends, we need to double food production in the world in 50 years just to keep up with the population and income growth. You know, people have more money now. People are in China, for instance, and they want different kinds and more food. And so that creates huge demands on the natural world around the world. And so we need to become, it's a major push on sustainability issues, is how can we make the same amount of food with less water? And that's what people at these universities around the country, around the world, that's what we work on, is trying to come up with ways to help us become more, improve our water use efficiency or nutrient use efficiency. That's one of the major pushes of sustainability that I think we in this country can help out on. And so it is a precious resource. And then Chris's point about buying local and stuff, in this part of in Miss Madison here, there's a lot of community-supported agriculture, CSAs. I mean, we have one. And people should be aware, part of when you do a CSA is you are, in essence, you're paying the farmer up front. You're providing him or her with insurance. And if you get a low yield because of the rain, shortage of rain this year, that's what you paid for. And you shouldn't be too upset. That's some farmers feel obligated to deliver high-quality produce no matter what, and that's not what a CSA is supposed to be. It's supposed to be an insurance to remove some of the risk from the farmer so that you, the consumer, and the farmer share the risk. A lot of these farmers are have irrigation systems, but they weren't necessarily meant for this intensive need of
right.
heat. And some of the quality of some of the crops will be affected for the people buying at the farmers markets or with their CSAs. I mean, we just did a survey of last year, and like 15-20% of the small vegetable growers in the state have no irrigation system.
Really?
That's 15-20%. Another 15-20% are relying on garden hoses and sprinklers.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, anyone can get a garden hose and sprinkler. You know, it's not that expensive, but some of them don't have water. You know, I don't have access to water at the wherever their garden is. But, you know, 60% of the farms have something like drip irrigation or more. But like I said, I think a lot of them weren't prepared for this dry and this hot of a spell, and I'm sure it stressed out, or, you know, they couldn't keep up with it irrigation-wise.
Mm-hmm. More phone calls in a moment. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our email, talk@wpr.org. You can leave messages on our Facebook page as well, and that's the Kathleen Dunn Show. We are talking about southern Wisconsin, particularly abnormally dry. We may soon find ourselves in a severe drought situation. The governor declared a drought state of emergency in 42 counties yesterday. How are farmers coping with this? What should we all be doing to do the right thing to help each other through this? And what are the long-term forecasts? Are we looking at more of this? Two more phone calls momentarily. Our guest this hour, our Professor Paul Mitchell, Associate Professor, Department of Agricultural and Applied Economics at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and Professor Chris Kacharek, who's Associate Professor of Agronomy and Environmental Studies at the Center for Sustainability and the Global Environment, also at UW-Madison. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program, The Price of the Ticket, Barack Obama and the Rise and Decline of Black Politics. Frederick Harris will be joining us. Ernest is our next caller in Hayward. Hi, Ernest.
Hi. I have read that the 2012 Farm Bill will be emphasizing crop insurance rather than direct commodity subsidies. These are prosperous times for farmers, and I wonder, maybe one reason could be that it's somewhat shameful to subsidize commodities during prosperous times. But I wonder if a bigger reason couldn't be the anticipation of climate change challenging the way we grow these subsidized commodities like corn and soybeans. In other words, we're going to need insurance because Mother Nature is going to force us to adapt.
Paul?
Yeah, I mean, that's partly, I mean, a lot of reason, I think, to push for crop insurance is it's seen as a, I don't know how you say it, more politically viable way of providing subsidization to growers. It's not just a check for owning farmland that has had production on it in the near past. Instead, you and the government share the cost of insurance. And then as a climate change, it makes sense. You just help insure the crop. And then, but as if the crops become riskier to grow because of climate change, the premiums are going to go up. And so the farmer and the government are going to continue to share that risk. It's just that the risk level will increase as there are more extreme events. So I think as opposed to just straight, here's some money for owning base acres, land that has had crop production on it, instead, that's you and I work together and come up with a way to share the risk of growing this crop. That's, I think, why we've seen a shift towards the crop insurance. It's a public-private partnership, if you will. And I think it is a mitigation strategy to help deal with variability in yields because of weather variability as a result of climate change or whatever.
And thank you very much for the call, Ernest. We have Dave Hansen with us to talk about help that may be available for Wisconsin farmers. He is program supervisor for the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection's Farm Center. Dave, thank you very much for joining us for a few moments here.
Good morning.
When the governor declared a drought emergency in 42 counties in the state yesterday, what did that make available to farmers who are stressed?
Farmers right now can apply with DNR to pump water to their fields out of lakes and streams, so they need to contact their regional office or their county offices of DNR and ask for a water specialist. The permit process usually would take a little bit longer. Now the turnaround time on getting these permits processed is going to be 72 hours.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that's available to farmers? What are you hearing from farmers in terms of what they need right now?
Well, like all of us, we need rain,
right.
And we can't make that happen right now. But we're putting together some informational resources of how to deal with crops that are under stress, how to feed crops to livestock that have been through drought conditions. UW Extension is working with us to put these materials together.
Let me tell both of our guests that you are absolutely free to question Dave along with me, Paul and Chris. And so the crops that are under stress, are you also worried at your department that farmers may be facing a loss of revenue, that there may be farmers who are not insured here, and that you're going to need to help in some way to allow them to continue to farm?
Yes, we have people working here at the Wisconsin Farm Center that work with farmers with their financial situations. And right now the thought is, what is the price is going to be for commodities with the farmers have to buy it in the wintertime, especially when we don't have this corn crop that we're used to having here.
Are you worried about long-term possibilities here, that because the earth is getting warmer for whatever reason, that we need to start perhaps changing the kinds of crops that we grow, that we need to start making basic modifications?
I don't know if it's because of what they call world climate change or not. It seems like every so often, 20 years, 50 years, 100-year cycles, we get into a few years where we have very hot and dry weather, and we haven't had a cycle like this since 1988. We went through somewhat of the same thing back then.
Mm-hmm. We've been talking some during this hour about animals, and we may be in for another wave of really hot weather. Let's hope not, but let's hope nothing is similar to what we had last week. But animals having a difficult time adapting to that kind of heat, particularly cows being kept in barns. Are you helping farmers with that to be able to cool their cows off?
Well, if there's people, most of the time the farmers are very in tune with what their animals are going through. We recommend that if they can mist them or put some cool water out where they can get kind of coated with it, and then combine that with good airflow and good air ventilation, that really helps the cows be non-stressed.
Mm-hmm. Paul and Chris, do you have any questions for Dave?
I guess I have one just small question, and going back to this, you know, idea of diverting water from lakes and streams, is DATCAP expecting, you know, more than five people to apply this year compared to what had happened back in August of 2009? I mean, the conditions are obviously much more severe this time around, and I'm just kind of curious if you have an idea if there was a lot of clamoring from farmers to start doing that.
And just since that announcement yesterday here at the Wisconsin Farm Center, and we don't actually give out the applications, we direct them to DNR, we've already had about four or five calls from farmers wondering how and who they get connected with to get those permits. So already in the first day, people are actually looking at utilizing this possibility to save some of their crops. And then the other thing I was thinking, some of these permits I think are going to go to people that produce produce.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how do people get a hold of you? How do they apply to get more information? How would they do that, Dave?
Our toll-free number is 1-800-942-2474. And that's the Wisconsin Farm Center.
800-942-2474.
Correct.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Thanks very much. Dave Hansen, Program Supervisor for the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection's Farm Center. We have time for maybe a couple more quick phone calls. Let us go to Linda in Sturgeon Bay. Thanks for waiting.
Well, thank you very much. I listen to public radio all the time, and on one of your previous programs, I do believe that I heard one of your speakers talking about the pollution that's coming across the Pacific Ocean from China and from some other newly industrialized countries that aren't paying quite as much attention to pollution. And that is actually preventing rainfall from forming because the particles are getting up into the upper atmosphere. And maybe your guest could comment upon that.
Professor Kucharik?
I have no knowledge of that connection. I think what we're seeing this year is it's so hard to pinpoint, you know, one reason or another why we happen to be in this pattern. I mean, as Dave had said in, you know, our last expert when he was on, you know, we go through these cycles. That's just the way the weather is, you know, across the planet. Sometimes it's hit or miss if you're going to get rainfall or not. And there has to be more studies to, you know, to try to make those connections. I think I'd have to go back and actually read a publication or two or something on who's trying to make that connection, but I personally would have a hard time believing that's having a large impact on what's going on in our neck of the woods this year.
One more call, about 45 seconds. Kelly, hi.
Hi. I got to shut my tractor off here.
All right.
All right. So now I can hear you. I actually think that it's a good thing. Well, not really good, but the drought is a good thing. I'm a vegetable farmer because it drives my prices up. It does.
Paul?
Yeah, that's the side effect. There's nothing like a good disaster. From a farmer's perspective, the best thing to happen is for everyone else to have the disaster and you have a good crop.
Mm.
I mean, one thing, to be honest, this year the prices of like corn and beans have gone up 25% in the last month. And if you're sitting with an irrigated crop, you're looking at a good chance to make some money. Your costs are higher with the irrigation, but yeah, I mean, if you look at that price increase, that's roughly assuming about the markets are assuming about a 10% loss in corn yield already, if you assume that 25% price increase is due just to the drought concerns across the country.
Mm. Thank you very much. I'm sorry, Kelly, we didn't have enough time to go in more depth here, but thank you, gentlemen, so much for the hour, and may it rain, may it rain.
Indeed.
May it rain. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Paul Mitchell, Associate Professor in the Department of Agricultural and Applied Economics at UW-Madison. Chris Kucharik, Associate Professor of Agronomy and Environmental Studies at the Center for Sustainability and the Global Environment, also at UW-Madison. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour and for on-air production in Milwaukee.